Tonight, if you got the message on Facebook, I said we're going to talk about chant, 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 can't, can't, can't. And one time Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture in Los Angeles. I happened to be there. And apparently he had read an article in a newspaper or a magazine, or he was told about an article, or told the story in which the wife is telling the husband, chant, 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 and the husband is saying, can't, can't, can't. So sometimes you may feel that way also. Sometimes we all feel that way. In around this time in Los Angeles, Prabhupada said, if anyone becomes Krishna conscious, if they become a devotee, if they take up sadhana in this lifetime, they're the most fortunate. And then he went on to say, but if anybody gives it up, then they're the most unfortunate. And the idea is that Krishna consciousness is such a valuable thing, it's so rarely achieved, that if one gets it and then one gives it up, one is even more unfortunate than someone who never got it. So Lord Chaitanya, in Shishastakam, you may know, he uses the word durdaivam. Durdaivam. Daiva means fortune and dur means bad. And he uses this word by saying that I'm unfortunate because I don't have any attraction for chanting the holy names. That's my great misfortune. So it's another type of misfortune when we're giving something as valuable as the holy name of Krishna, and we may take it for granted, or we may, how should we say it politely, we don't want to offend anybody, but I think we all experience that sometimes when we're chanting, we don't want to. We're bored. We'd rather be doing something else. We just want to get it over with, which of course is our great misfortune. And I want to discuss this tonight a little bit and perhaps realize the fortune we have and thereby realize the treasure that exists in the holy name and thereby take more advantage of it. So, what is, I mean, we're chanting, all of us are chanting, we're around kirtan, we do japa, but what is the holy name? I think the more we understand it, the more we'll appreciate it, and the more we'll honor it when we're chanting. Because as I said, oftentimes we don't honor the holy name, but we sometimes take it as a chore or something that even gets in the way of something else we might want to do. And that is durdaivam, that is our misfortune. Just as if Krishna came to your home and you were too busy to deal with him, we would say, you are greatly unfortunate if that's what you did when Krishna came to your home. But so Krishna comes in his name, it's similar. So how is it similar? Well, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he explains that the name of Krishna is an incarnation, nam avatar. And so what does it mean? When we say avatar, we mean Krishna coming, descending. And when we say nam avatar, we mean Krishna has descended in Kali Yuga in his name. That is Krishna. Now, it's a little problematic for us because we don't have that experience often or ever that when we're chanting that we are in the presence of Krishna. So how do we understand this? Well, one of the ways we understand this is that oftentimes devotees wonder or ask, when I'm chanting, should I be meditating on Krishna's pastime? Should I be meditating on his form, on his qualities? But because Krishna and his name are the same, because Nam is an avatar of Krishna, then that name is the form, and that name is the quality, and that name is the pastimes. Now, if we have to artificially force ourselves, it's not bad to do that, But it means that we're not fully realizing that Krishna is present in his name. Because if we were, we wouldn't have to force thinking, or wouldn't have to try to think of his form, but we would see his form as we're chanting. I mean, that's the understanding when we hear or we learn that the name of Krishna and Krishna are the same. So we don't realize that, but in a purified state, when we say Krishna, we would see the form of Krishna. We would be experiencing the presence of Krishna. We read that great acharyas, when they're chanting the holy name, they're seeing the leelas of Krishna, because the name is full of leela, because it's Krishna. So I'm just saying this to help us appreciate what the holy name is, and then help us realize when Mahaprabhu says, "I am unfortunate." Why am I unfortunate? Just like Dhruva Maharaj, when he had darshan of Lord Vishnu, then Lord Vishnu said, "So I've come to fulfill your desire," because he was meditating on Lord Vishnu, so he could call the Lord and ask him for something material. And then Dhruva said, "No, now that I see you, I have a real diamond, a real jewel. And my desires, my material desires, are just like glass." So in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, I think I have this verse right here. Just happen to have it. I will read it for you. This is from Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He says, "The holy name is the highest nectar. It is my very life and my only treasure." Isn't that nice? The holy name is the highest nectar. It is my very life and my only treasure. Think of that. It's my only treasure. I mean, how many things do we treasure in this world? For the pure devotee, the holy name is his only treasure. Now, there are many reasons one would say that the holy name is my only treasure. We're talking about the holy name as being Krishna. So Krishna comes to us. What a treasure that is. Krishna comes to us in his holy name. We have left Krishna, we turned our back on Krishna, we came into the material world. So Prabhupada said, in that condition, we don't have any right or qualification to ask Krishna to accept us, or to demand, of course we can always ask, but to demand that Krishna would accept us, or there's no reason, that we haven't done anything for Krishna to accept us. So out of Krishna's kindness, he comes in the form of the holy name, and the holy name is approachable. So we actually have Krishna's darshan in his name. We actually are with Krishna's name. He's come to us in his name. But Prabhupada said, in our conditioned state, we can't see Krishna. So he comes in a form which we can appreciate more. So now Krishna is accessible to us. We can personally associate with Radha and Krishna. And within Krishna's names are all the pastimes. And within Krishna's name, it reveals our relationship with him. That everything is there in the name. Like everything, every spiritual benefit you could want, every realization you could ever want to have, every spiritual desire is fulfilled. Everything is there contained within the holy name. And that's why Sanatana Goswami says, it's my greatest treasure. It's the most valuable thing for me. So our problem is, and it's only a problem if we don't chant well, but if we don't chant well, our problem is we won't have those realizations. We won't realize that Krishna's in his name. We'll just think it's a sound, or we'll think it's a duty, or it's a chore that I have a certain number of rounds to chant, and I have to do it every day. Kind of like some ritual. You know, you may have a religious ritual. You know, you light some candle every day, or you do a puja to protect your family and so forth. And you may like doing it, you may not like doing it, but you do it every day. So that's ritual. In ritual, when we talk about ritual, we talk more about duty and less about love. So if chanting becomes like a ritual where there's no real attraction, then we tend to take the holy name for granted, and we don't realize the fortune we have. And therefore, Mahaprabhu says, I'm unfortunate. Would you like to hear something else about the holy name? I have a special book here, I'll show you. I don't know where you get it. If you can get this book, get it. Somebody gave it to me. Actually, I believe it's published by Torchlight. Let me tell you. It's called The Name, 108 Glorifications. Yes, it's published by Torchlight. I don't know if it's still available. Well, let's read a few verses from this book to help us appreciate the complete irony of chant, 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 can't, or I don't want to, or I'd rather be doing something else, or just the mind being distracted while we're chanting. And it's all a sign of misfortune that Krishna's coming. Krishna's descending in his holy name, and within his holy name, we have access to him, to Radha and Krishna. We can enter in the pastimes, and we can get not only love of Krishna, but love that Lord Chaitanya is giving. It's a higher form of love. It's love in the mood of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. It's spontaneous love. It's a very high love. And Mahaprabhu, he comes in every Kali Yuga, but he doesn't come in this form, so he rarely gives this kind of love. This is called Premanam. The name that Mahaprabhu gives in this age awakens the highest kind of prema. So how fortunate can we be, and how unfortunate can we be not to take advantage of it? So here's a similar verse to what we're discussing. The treasure of divine love in Goloka, Vrindavan, has descended in the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. The treasure, so there's another verse with the word treasure. The treasure of divine love has descended. Wow. In the holy name, divine love exists. And it's descended and easily accessible. In the Shishashtakam, Mahaprabhu says there's no hard and fast rules. So what does he mean? He means that you don't have to be initiated to chant mantras, because traditional Vedic mantras were chanted by Brahmins. So you don't have to be initiated. You don't have to be a Brahmin. You don't need previous qualifications. You can be born in any country, in any culture, in any race, and you can become purified. Even without undergoing any other purificatory practices, you can be purified by the chanting of the holy name. So that's what Mahaprabhu means by there's no hard and fast rules. So the holy name is descending, and then Mahaprabhu gives it to everyone. So now Krishna, who was only really only accessible by those who were pure, it's like the Brahmins, they're the only ones that can worship the Murti, the deity. So only accessible by those who were pure, or we have the example, if you want to enter the sun, then you have to become fire. Otherwise you'll get burnt. But if you become fire, you become like the sun. So if you want to associate with Krishna, you have to be pure, because Krishna is pure. So Brahmins, they're the ones who do the puja, because they're pure. Now, they're initiated, twice born. Now, the holy name comes, and Krishna says, okay, I'll descend as a holy name, and anybody can chant it. No previous qualification necessary. And I will allow anyone to associate with me through my holy names, through chanting my names. So when we're chanting every day, and I hope you're chanting every day, Krishna is actually there in that sound. He's present. We don't necessarily feel it, but he's present. And within that name is the highest nectar and our only treasure. And our relationship with Krishna can fully manifest through the chanting. My experience with chanting is that the name is like Krishna, it's unlimited, and we can gain more and more realization from chanting, and we can go deeper, like an example of an ocean, just going and going and going, and you're finding the ocean goes and goes, you're never getting to the bottom. So the holy name is like that, and it's not, it's dynamic. Spiritual life is dynamic. So it's like Krishna, it's ever fresh. The problem is if we commit offenses, then what we're chanting is not really the holy name, and so we're not getting the experience of the holy name. And so then when we read verses like this, we read them and we become confused. You ever read a verse and so the holy name is the highest nectar, it's my only life, there's nothing more in the three worlds and so forth. And then you read it and you think, either you think it's an exaggeration, or you think I'll never be able to experience that, or that's just the pure devotees experience that. But it's not actually just for the pure devotees. Because even a person off the street, if they seriously take to chanting or they go into a kirtan, they can begin dancing in ecstasy, and Prabhupada says that. It doesn't necessarily, that's Mahaprabhu's mercy. But one of the things that I have found is that when I make an effort to improve my japa, when I make an effort to look at what I'm doing wrong, when I make an effort to learn more about the holy name, to find out what I can do to improve, to make the effort to be present with the holy name when I'm chanting, to make the effort, as we talked about last week, to just let the mind dissolve, so to speak, and just be absorbed, just yourself and the name and nothing else. When I make that effort, then Krishna kindly gives me so many realizations. Because the name is Krishna, and therefore so many realizations will come. But when I don't do that, when I'm distracted, when I take the holy name as a chore or burden, then it's a different mantra. It's just a shadow or a reflection. It's not, and that's not what we want. We can't advance in Krishna consciousness by a reflection of the holy name. Or if you want something to eat, you can't satisfy your hunger with the reflection of the food. You have to eat it. So sometimes when we're chanting, we're just getting the reflection. And the misfortune of that is that there's so much nectar there. Not only nectar to taste, but there's so much purification in the holy name, and there's so much spiritual strength we can get from the holy name. But it does take an effort to get it. And Krishna, as Prabhupada said many times, Krishna is not cheap, right? So what does Prabhupada mean that Krishna's not cheap? Well, we say Krishna's giving the holy name freely, so that sounds cheap, right? You don't have to pay for it. But still, there's an effort to get through the coverings of the holy name, to get more deeply into the nectar. There has to be some work done. And one of the problems I think that many devotees face is that they don't often look at their japa as something that needs, how should we say, it needs to be modified continually. We need to be looking at how we're doing. We need to be improving. We need to be reflecting. Is my japa going up? Is it going down? Are there things I can do to improve? Are there things which I'm doing which are hampering my japa, or things I'm doing which are minimizing the efficacy of my chanting? There are some statements in Shastra and by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas that when we chant, if we're chanting offensively or we're distracted, then we're just making the sound Krishna, but Krishna is not present in his name. So it's an important principle. Or another example is given, if you're familiar with homeopathic medicine, they put a little bit of medicine on these sugar pills, coated sugar pills. And then they shake it up. So each little sugar pill gets a minute form of medicine, because in homeopathic medicine, the medicine is actually poison. But you get just a little bit. So your body develops a reaction to the poison, develops the antibodies or whatever. It's the same idea as vaccination. You get a little bit of the disease in your body, builds up a tolerance to it. So in homeopathic medicine, the important thing is the medicine, not the sugar pill. So if you get the sugar pill without the medicine, it won't be effective. So in chanting the holy name, you have the sugar pill, which is the sound Krishna. But if there's no essence there, there's no devotion there, there's no proper chanting, if it's simply offensive, then it's like the sugar pill without the medicine. It's like it's Krishna, the sound Krishna, but no Krishna there. So we want to avoid that. And the reason I called this show Chant, 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 Can't, Can't, because it's because when we're not doing well in our japa, there's a feeling of a burden or a difficulty in chanting the holy name. And that is a sign to us. That's a red flag. If we're not relishing chanting, that means we're not chanting properly, because the holy name is sweet. And if we're chanting properly, we'll taste that sweetness. You don't have to try to taste it. You don't have to try to look for it. You'll just taste it. And if you're not chanting properly, you'll feel this kind of burden, this kind of duty. I just have to do it. And that's not what we want. And because if that's all we're getting, then it's going to be difficult to go on enthusiastically in Krishna consciousness. If service to Krishna, if service to the holy name becomes a burden, it's not helpful. It's going to hinder our bhakti. So the idea is, if we chant well, we'll get a taste. And this is how we monitor. This is how we understand if we're chanting well. If when we finish our rounds, we're feeling, I would like to go on if I had time. It's a good sign. It means some taste is there. That means we're chanting well. If we finish our rounds, we're on our last round, and we're thinking, I can't wait till I finish. This is boring, or this is troublesome, or this is difficult. That's a sign. It's not. Don't think it's a sign, well, I'm just a young devotee. No. It's a sign you're not chanting well. Whether you're a young devotee or not, it's a sign you're not chanting well. Because the holy name is powerful. And if you chant it properly, even if you're a young devotee or a new devotee, you don't know that much, you're going to have a Krishna conscious experience. It's going to be relishable. That's because Krishna is relishable. Krishna is blissful. He's there in his name. So, I want to read what you're saying. I have been neglecting you. Please excuse me. Could you please give the name of the author and publication again? Yeah. The book is called The Name, 108 Glorifications. And it's published by Torchlight Publishing. Torchlight Publishing. You can Google Torchlight Publishing. So why don't we read something else from this book? There are many, many nice verses here. Oh, hope everyone's awake. I'm going to read a special verse. Yes, sometimes, Carol, sometimes when I give class like this, I think, why keep talking about the holy name? We should just chant. Just chant japa. So here's a wonderful verse. This is from the Sri Harinam Chintamani. This is by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Harinam Chintamani is a book Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote to help people overcome offenses and to chant the pure name, which is called Shuddhanam. Shuddhanam, to chant the pure name, you have to be pure. So you have to chant the impure name to come to the stage of the pure name. It's the way it works. The holy name is the most precious treasure in the Lord's storehouse. Now, isn't this interesting? The holy name is the most precious treasure in the Lord's storehouse. Now, people are going to God and they're praying for things. Give me money, give me happiness, give me health, good education, ability, and so forth. But really, we should be praying for pure chanting, because that's the greatest treasure in the Lord's storehouse. It's the holy name. So, okay, we have the holy name. We've been given the greatest treasure, right? But do we realize it's the greatest treasure? Sometimes, maybe. Maybe never. Maybe we pick up our bead bag in the morning, we think, oh no, here it goes again, another day of struggle. But really, if we take this understanding that here is the greatest treasure in the Lord's treasure house, the greatest wealth in the Lord's, what does it say? The most precious treasure in the Lord's storehouse. So, my dear Lord, please give me the nectar of the holy name. Please help me to realize the glories of your name. Please help me serve your name. Please help me chant purely. If you went to Krishna and you said, I want the most valuable thing you have in your treasure house, what would Krishna give you? He would give you his holy name, because his holy name is him. He's giving you himself. And in his holy name, you can get love of Krishna. So you get Krishna. And before you have love of Krishna, you still get Krishna. And then, by chanting, you get love of Krishna. So what else is there to get? If you get Krishna and love of Krishna, you've got everything. You think, no, but I need a new car. No. You might need a new car. But if you get love of Krishna, you won't care if you don't have one. So, okay. So we are, I was, earlier this week, I was having some nice experiences with japa. And I was meditating on this verse. I don't know if you'd know this verse. There's a verse in, a couple of verses in the shastra, in the scripture, where it says that we have turned our back on Krishna. And we want to enjoy Maya, the material world, and this is how we're conditioned. And because of that desire, then we suffer in the material world. So, in meditating on that, and I think it's obvious to all of us, we see that the desire to move Krishna a little bit out of the center and put ourselves in the center, the desire to have the mentality of an enjoyer as opposed to a servant. I don't know if we spoke about this last week, but you can see it in yourself, where as devotees we tend to switch. It's like we switch stations. That sometimes when we're doing well, we're on the servant station. But then we see something, or something comes up in our life, and we switch to the enjoyer station. And we forget that we're the servant. And then we see things which either should be used for Krishna and we think how we can enjoy them, or we see things that cannot be used for Krishna and we think, how can I enjoy them? And then we come to our senses, or we switch back to the servant station, we come to our senses. And then that same desire to enjoy is not there. So we are battling as conditioned souls with this propensity, because we're so used to keeping Krishna out of the center, because we've turned our back on him for so long. So I was having an experience when I was chanting japa, when I got what you could say is in the zone, where it was just me and the holy name and really experiencing the presence of Krishna. And when I got very deep into this experience, it started to dawn on me that a relationship with Krishna, although it's something that we relish deeply, there's a part of us that is not comfortable with it, because we've been away from it for so long and we've been so used to putting Krishna out of the center, that to bring him back in the center can be a little scary. Now, you may not realize this, or you may realize this, but if you allow yourself to meditate on this and go deeply, and you begin to contact that part of you, that conditioned part, that rebellious part that wants to be the enjoyer, that part that wants to play God, and that part that doesn't want to submit, that the false ego part that wants to identify as something other than servant. If you really feel and experience that, you can see there's an awkwardness in associating with Krishna because we're so used to being independent. It's like if a man and woman are divorced and they live separately for a long time and then they want to try to come together again, sometimes it's not possible because they're used to being independent. Or if a person has been divorced for a long time or never married, they're used to being independent, it can be hard. So relationships are difficult. So as I was chanting, I was feeling Krishna's presence very, very closely, and there was this almost fear in a sense, or the ability, because the chanting was so good, the ability to become aware of that other side of me that could possibly feel awkward in an intimate relation with Krishna. It's like imagine if Krishna came to you and came to your house and said, "Okay, here I am." And it's just like everything, you know, everything you own, your life, your body, everything is just for him. It's like your whole life would change. But to think, well, how ready are we for that? Could I actually do that? Would I want to? Of course, you could rationalize and say, well, if Krishna came, he's so blissful and I would be purified. Yes. But still, the point I'm making is there's a part of us that has been away from Krishna for so long that if you're chanting really well and you come close to Krishna, you can also awaken that other side of the resistance. And we did, I'll tell you a story. It's interesting, it's a little scary, but we did, in a japa workshop, we have an exercise in which you chant and you meditate on Krishna. No. Well, we do two exercises. I forget which one we did. You chant, and you meditate on Krishna in your heart, and then you meditate that Krishna's come out, and your eyes are closed, and you imagine a Krishna sitting in front of you, and you're chanting to him. That's one exercise we do. You can try this. It's quite interesting. You're just chanting as if Krishna's sitting in front of you, and you just want to please him. And then another exercise we did was, we take the role of Krishna, we become Krishna. And then we have a partner, someone we speak to. And the partner becomes us. So what we do is, we as Krishna speak to our partner, which means we as Krishna are speaking to ourselves. And we're telling ourselves as Krishna what we're doing wrong with our japa and what we're doing right with our japa. So in other words, let's say Pallavi was my partner. So Pallavi would become me, and I would become Krishna. And when I would be speaking to Pallavi, I would be saying, "Mahatma, this is what you're doing wrong with your japa. And this is what you're doing well with your japa. This is what you're doing right." So a few days later, a devotee came up to me, and she was relating one of those two exercises. I think we may have done another one where you go into counseling with Krishna. You can imagine this. You know, we've had a broken relationship with Krishna, so now we're going into counseling, trying to put it together. And that's what religion is all about. Religion is really counseling with God. So Krishna says, "Well, I have some issues with you. You know, a long time ago you turned your back on me, you tried to imitate me, and I've given you so much, and all you've done is you've just taken. You haven't really given. Many, many lives, you know, I've given you, and you just keep taking, and you give very little. And, you know, I don't feel loved by you." So, you know, you could imagine if you went into therapy with Krishna about your relationship. Not that Krishna would say that, but because he's a person, he could say that. And even the acharyas explain that, you know, when we're away from Krishna, Krishna feels sadness, and we can offer pleasure to Krishna, as we were saying last week. Each of us has a unique relation with Krishna, and we can offer pleasure in a unique way. So Krishna is unhappy when we're not together. So anyway, a few days after, a devotee came to me who was in the workshop, and she said, that section when we did one of these exercises with Krishna, she said, it was so heavy because I never actually ever put myself in a position as if I was having a relationship with Krishna, like Krishna was there and I had to relate and there's this relationship and this is the relationship and this is the deepest relationship and this is the person probably who we offended more than anybody. So it was all coming out. And my point is that sometimes when you go very deeply into your chanting, you will experience this sweet relationship. And in the experience of the sweet relationship, what can come out of that is a resistance. Because you realize, the closer you get to Krishna, you realize how much you've been avoiding Krishna. And either you can feel uncomfortable being close to Krishna, or you could feel resentful of yourself for turning your back on Krishna. There's so many emotions that could come up. So that was coming up for me when I was chanting. And then something, it was just, I don't know, I could say it's just something that could happen if you go more deeply into your japa, and more into your relationship, and you're really chanting, and you're really there with Krishna in his name, and you're experiencing to some degree that Krishna is there, that Radha is there, that the pastimes are there, everything is there in his name, Krishna is there, and you can become a little overwhelmed by that. And then you realize, oh, I have neglected this relationship, and you can feel very bad. Or as I said, you could feel awkward because you're getting closer, and maybe, you know, you're not ready for it. It's kind of like when you're 11 or 12 years old and the boys and or 13 and boys and girls start to come together, even though the boys and girls are attracted to one another, it's very awkward. At that age, it's very awkward hanging around together or having a girlfriend or boyfriend. It's weird. You're not accustomed to that relationship. So it can be something like that. I'm not really accustomed. I'm not used to serving Krishna. I mean, he's God, and you know, I can offer prayers and like that. But a close relationship and is something different. And the name brings us into that close relationship. But I would say it's good, but there was a realization of that part of me. There's something that could be afraid to get too close, too fast. You know, maybe like the man and woman come together and he wants to get married and she's, well, let's wait, and you know, too quickly, too fast. So, you know, Krishna's willing to give himself to us as we open up to the holy name. And then the awkward thing becomes is as we open up more and more to the holy name, we get closer and closer, and then we may be reluctant to get too close and thinking, well, I don't know if I can handle this, or maybe my life will change too much. And these are, it's just purification coming up. And these are things we have to deal with. And they will come up if you chant well. Or at least they'll come up for some of you. Now, the other thing that happens, I mean, it's good if it comes up. That means you're chanting well. It means you're getting closer to Krishna. And you're confronting this eternal conditioning, you know, this turning our backs on Krishna. And now we're confronting it. So after, I'm going to talk a little more about this, but I just want to finish this line of thought. Then after, a few days after, I had a couple days of really good chanting sessions. Something very interesting happened to me, which was the chant, 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 can't part of it. Whereas Prabhupada said, chant, 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 chant. That I sat down to chant, and I previously had some very good japa sessions the last 2 or 3 days. And then I thought, what if I chant and I don't hear the mantra? What if I chant and I get bored? What if I chant and I get distracted and it becomes painful to chant? What if I commit offenses when I chant? And Krishna was allowing me to see this. I never really saw this so clearly before. But Krishna was allowing me to see how sometimes, even though I had good japa sessions, there was resistance a few days later to chant out of fear that I wasn't going to chant well. And I realized that I think for many of us, either we're conscious of this or on a subconscious level, those of us who are not chanting well, I'll answer your question later, Pallavi. So when we confront this chant, 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 can't, can't, this kind of burdensome chanting, one of the things that might be going on is this feeling that, well, if I don't chant well, why should I even chant? If I'm not chanting well, the more I don't chant well, the worse it gets, and the more I can be habituated to poorly chanting. So the next time I chant, now I've developed a poor chanting habit. It's going to make it more difficult to chant. So I was kind of going through a, I wouldn't say panic, but a very subtle kind of panic, thinking, but what if I chant offensively now? If I don't chant at all, I won't chant offensively. But now I'm going to sit down. I actually sit down right here where I'm sitting now when I chant in the morning. I say, I'm going to sit down. And I thought, but what if I don't chant well this morning? This will be a disaster. And I realized the subtle workings of the mind, how our mind may be working against us through a fear that maybe I'll just chant and get bored. And maybe I won't even be able to finish my rounds. Maybe after 8 rounds, I'll just get bored and want to do something else. So there was a resistance there to even chant at all out of fear that the chanting would not go well. And the fear was a result of the fact that I was chanting well the previous days because I wanted to keep up that standard and I was afraid, well, maybe I can't. It's interesting, huh? So David says, well, isn't chanting poorly better than not chanting at all? Yes and no. The yes is, there's hope if you continue chanting. The no is, continually chanting offensively is not going to help us. And the no means it could make it worse in the sense that if we're not improving our chanting, if we're chanting offensively, the chanting will become so difficult for us that we may stop. We may just say, I can't do this anymore. Which is kind of what I was expressing here, that if we're not chanting well, at least working on improving and having some consistency of some decent chanting, it can become very, very difficult to continue over long periods of time. So Shastra, Srila Prabhupada recommends, you know, the process for rectification is to continue chanting. If you offend somebody, then you ask for apology. If you offend the holy name, continuous chanting is the apology. But if we continually chant offensively, it's not going to help us, and it could make it worse. But in my case, my fear was a fear that I would continually chant offensively after having experienced a closeness with Krishna through his name. So now I wanted to mention something else. I don't know if you can relate to this. Maybe this is something that is going to be down the road for you. But what I'm guessing is that this is there for all of us on some level, but maybe we haven't confronted it. Maybe we haven't realized that there is this, you know, deep down there's this reluctance to get too close to Krishna on some level. And that reluctance is what prevents us from tasting the nectar. And it's almost, I think, for some of us, it's almost like we prevent ourselves from tasting the nectar because we're afraid if we taste the nectar, perhaps we'll go too far in spiritual life, or we'll get too close to Krishna, we'll be too Krishna conscious. You know, it's like, you know, you just bought a Corvette and now you're going to drive 120 miles down the road. If you're afraid of driving 120 miles down the road, don't buy a sports car. Because they'll go 0 to 120 in about 8 seconds or something. So it's like the holy name is so powerful, it takes us to Krishna. But then there may be something inside of us that's saying, I don't know if I really want to go to Krishna that fast. And that could be the can't part. We could actually be monitoring our own chanting so that we don't chant so well, because if we do, we're going to go to a higher level of Krishna consciousness than we think we're ready. Now, we may not be consciously thinking of this, but it's likely there if you look for it and you start to see this. You know, when we're chanting and we're getting bored and we're dragging on, you know, what's going on? Why are we doing that? Why are we allowing ourselves to chant that way? Are we just lazy? Are we not making an effort? That could be. Or are we in some way resisting chanting well? And so that's something to ponder. We may be resisting chanting good rounds. Now, I was previously to making this point, I was saying there's this other aspect that sometimes comes up in the heart, that Krishna, I've offended you for lifetimes, I've turned my back on you. And we feel this conditioned nature that we're so used to putting Krishna on the outskirts of our lives and keeping ourselves more in the center. And as you advance in Krishna consciousness, that can weigh very heavy on you, and you can experience that conditioning, not more strongly, but you be more clear about, you know, what it means to be adverse to Krishna. As you become more purified, you become more clear on what it means to be adverse. You become more clear on what it means to be conditioned. You become more clear on what it means to be false ego. And you become more clear on what it means to be an enjoyer. And you can see your viewpoints changing as you look at things in this world, from the point of view of servant or the point of view of enjoyer, and it becomes very obvious how you respond when you do that. So, Prabhupada once said, he gave a definition of the Maha Mantra. We know the definition he gave was Krishna, Radha, please engage me in your service. But Prabhupada gave another definition. He said, Krishna, please accept me. That's a definition. Krishna, please accept me. So, we are here in the world, in the material world, we've turned our back on Krishna, and now we realize the depth of that conditioning, we realize the depth of that rebellion against Krishna, we realize the intensity of the enviousness we have of God. And it's very heavy to confront that. And then in that confrontation, in that realization, while we're chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. There's a prayer, there's a feeling, Krishna, please accept me. And Prabhupada said, we have no right to demand it, so we're simply asking Krishna, please accept me. I have no right. I can't ask you, I can't beg you. I mean, I can beg you, I can ask you, but I have no right. Krishna, please accept me. Please allow me to reestablish myself in that relationship. So if we are going to ask Krishna to please accept us, then we have to be willing to be accepted in that relationship. So we have to, you know, make whatever amends we have to make with Krishna. We have to open our heart to Krishna, to Guru. We have to be willing to give ourselves, because we're asking, when we're chanting, we're asking Krishna, please accept me. At least we should be. That's what we should be feeling. That is part of the prayerful mood and the heartfelt feelings of the chanter. Krishna, lift me out of the material world, place me as an atom at your lotus feet, accept me in your service. This is what we want, this is what we aspire to. So if that's what we're praying, we have to have an open heart and a willingness for that. Otherwise, somewhere in our consciousness, somewhere in our subconscious, somewhere, we're going to hold back. And it might be that this can't chanting is actually done subconsciously to prevent us from getting too close to Krishna. It's something to think about, because we're actually afraid to. I can't say that's for you. I cannot say it's for anybody. I can only say this is my own realization. I'm just asking you to explore that. Because really, think about it. The holy name is the highest nectar. It's the greatest treasure. It's the greatest valuable thing Krishna has. And in the holy name, we get love of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna fully manifest. Our siddhadeha, our eternal form, is revealed through the holy name. We can see Krishna's lila. We get everything. So now we're chanting our rounds, and sometimes we get distracted. And then we go read something, or we go do our laundry or whatever. Or we're reading a book, or we're chanting, and we're just distracted. Or we're not doing anything physically, and we're just distracted in our mind, or we're just bored, or we're just thinking. And say, why would we do that? If the holy name is Krishna, why would we do that? What is it in us that we're just reluctant to establish this relationship? What's going on there? That, you know, it's like somebody gives you hundreds of millions of dollars, and you're just like, what did I do with that? Where did I put it? I'll find it later. It's like that. You get the jewel of the holy name, and it just, and our mind is off somewhere, and we're chanting. I'm like, why are we doing that? We're so conditioned to avoid Krishna that even when we're chanting his name, sometimes we're avoiding him. These are all things to think about. Chant, chant, chant. Can't. I don't want to. Why don't we want to? What is wrong? Of course, we could say, yes, I'm conditioned. I make so many offenses and so forth. But my point is, if we make the effort to chant properly, we can overcome offenses. And we can come to a very good level of japa. And we can get a lot of realizations, and we can come much closer. So if we're not doing that, we have to you know, look at ourselves and see what's going on. Now, I want to... address your questions. So, Pallavi is asking, could you please speak more on the exercise where we assume the role of Krishna while chanting? I should want to do that. Well, you don't assume it while you're chanting. Basically, the exercise is because Krishna's in your heart, so Krishna knows, he sees your chanting, he knows what's in your heart, he knows what you're thinking. He watches your chanting. So, if Krishna were to come to you and tell you some things you could do to improve your japa, what do you think he would tell you? So you could play the role of Krishna and you could talk to yourself and say, well, Pallavi, I think you should be doing this. I think when you're chanting, you shouldn't be doing something else. You should really give your full attention to the name. And I think you should be doing this earlier in the morning rather than later at night. So you think of what Krishna would be telling you. That's the, that's one of the exercises. Assuming the role of Krishna. The other exercise was you imagine Krishna sitting in front of you and you're just chanting to please him. Like Dhruva Maharaj saw Krishna in his heart and then Krishna came out of his heart and then so he had darshan. It's like a darshan of Krishna, and just, you know, there's a form of japa, kind of japa, where we're just chanting because Krishna likes to hear his name and Krishna is pleased that we're chanting and Prabhupada is pleased that we're chanting. So just chanting as a servant for the pleasure of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just chanting to please the holy name. So that's the idea. So Pallavi says, I have a fear that when I start chanting, and I do enjoy it so much, but I shall be or could be disturbed by someone or some chore or the other and will end up feeling so disappointed. Yeah, so that's what I was experiencing also, that... And I think it's a fear that we will offend Krishna. I think really that's what it's coming from, which in a sense is a good fear. But the real solution is is when we're chanting, we should realize that we are of a higher nature, and that we are spiritual beings. It said we're marginal energy, but our real connection is in the spiritual world. We are not eternal residents of the material world. So our connection is higher. It's not lower. The mind is lower, so the mind can bring us lower, but our connection as we are is higher. We're a part of Krishna. We're connected to Krishna. So when we're chanting, as we had discussed in previous shows, there may be fears and so forth that we won't do it well. But we want to be the controller of the mind and intelligence as a spiritual being. And so gain more confidence that, yes, I can chant properly if I make the effort, and have that confidence. And the feeling that we can't, the fear that we may not be able to do it, in a sense is a good feeling, because it's if we make it a kind of caution, that I have to be cautious. But I was seeing it for myself, and in a sense it was a positive thing, because I really wanted to chant well, and I was thinking, oh, I don't want to offend Krishna. So that also can be an impetus to chant well. But the point is, create the intention to chant well and pray to Krishna to give you the power, and be focused on that intention, and don't allow other things to distract you. Because you, as the spiritual being that you are higher than mind, higher than senses, higher than intelligence, higher than false ego. So that's the idea. And then Krishna will come on your team and will help you. So if this is what you want, you'll get it. And you may have some obstacles to overcome, and there may be some struggles, but you continue and it will happen. So Bhakti Carol says, I feel good when I'm chanting, I feel safe. Yes, that is normal. That's how we should feel, because Krishna is there in his name and blissful. But I want to relate a story, interesting story. At one of the japa retreats that we did, it was very interesting. Bhakti Carol says, I don't mean I feel safe about the quality of my chanting. I mean, I understood. Don't feel safe about the quality. You just feel safe. You're with Krishna. You feel protected, right? Protected from Maya. That's how I understood what you said. I often have that feeling also, that if the holy name is there, then everything is just going to work out, right? Yeah, everything's okay. Yeah, because I'm there with the holy name. And Prabhupada said the safest place in the material world is kirtan. It's the same. Yeah, so the holy name, it's the safest place. Everything is okay. Whenever we're in anxiety, we just focus on the holy name, and we understand that Krishna will take care of everything. We had a japa retreat several years ago, and this retreat was very interesting, because what was happening is, on the 64 round day, a lot of things were coming up in the heart, because the heart is being cleansed. So it was like the facilitators were becoming therapists. It was very, very interesting. The devotees were confronting a lot of things. So what I was revealing to you is just one of those things that came up as a confrontation that sometimes comes up. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in the process of purification, as you overcome some problems, you come to a new level of problems. So these things will go on until we come to a higher level, where basically we've overcome our obstacles. But still, even if there are obstacles there, we can feel safe and happy and okay with the holy name. But the point that I was getting to in this talk was the problem of sometimes just a resistance to chanting, and a kind of a disturbed mind mentality, passionate and just unsettled, and this long-standing, rebellious, envious nature. We're still working with it. And I, Giriraj Swami said something nice. He said, japa is like a, it's kind of like a microcosm of our relationship with Krishna. You know, originally we turned our back on Krishna. So he said, sometimes you can experience that when you're chanting, that you're facing Krishna and you're really there with the holy name, and sometimes you just kind of forget Krishna, you turn away. So something as valuable as the holy name is really important that we enshrine it as a valuable jewel, take care of it, relish it, and don't allow it to become rusty. I think there was a song by Joan Baez or Bob Dylan, Diamonds and Rust. Yes. So we don't want the holy name to become something other for us than the most valuable gem, because that's what it is. And if we take it that way, very quickly we'll make advance. But there's, you know, japa is our personal work with Krishna. That's our personal date with Krishna every day. That's when we're alone with him. So we want to be alone with him. We don't want to be distracted by anything else. And if anything comes up in our heart while we're chanting, it's just welcome, because we're just confronting the stuff, the garbage, the, you know, whatever is there in our heart. Let it come up. It's okay if it comes up, and it's part of the process, and it's wonderful. And we can just move through it and allow Krishna and his name to purify us. I mean, we may chant and realize that we have something we've never realized before about ourselves, that we're more proud than we thought we were, or that we've mistreated people and we didn't realize that, or our ego is much bigger than we think it is, or we're more stubborn. Or, you know, the holy name can reveal so many things, but it's welcome. But we just don't want to ever be resistant to what the holy name does, because then that can cause this difficulty. I can't chant. I don't want to chant. It's a chore. It's a burden. I have other things to do like that. So, thank you all for coming. Hope I didn't scare anybody with that. It's all positive. Don't worry. It's all good. Krishna is wonderful. You are wonderful. The relationship is wonderful. Prabhupada is wonderful. All the devotees are wonderful. And the holy name is wonderful. So thank you, everyone. Next Tuesday, we will see you. Be here. But I was just thinking, I'm going to Mayapur October 26th. So the last show from America will be October 25th, which means there'll be three more shows. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to broadcast well from Mayapur. I could do it at 5:30 in the morning. Will be 8 o'clock at night here. But right now, where my wife and family are staying, is a very poor internet connection, so I'd have to go somewhere else. So we're going to see it. So I can't guarantee anything. Let's everybody, we can all stay up all night and chant together, okay? We should all get everyone's telephone number, and then we'll chant japa. Thank you for coming, Sharada, and Pallavi, and Kremlin, and Carol. We're always missing Carol when she doesn't come, and David, and Manukanta, and Krishnadas, and Catherine, and Amit. And if you have any other questions, just email me. And we can deal with it at this address. Or go to my website, Mahatma Das, and you can read all kinds of articles. If any of you are in the Gainesville area, we're doing on Saturday, we're doing a japa, Friday night and Saturday, we're doing a japa workshop. And I think you may have to contact the temple in Gainesville if you can come, it may be limited. And Bhakti and Carol, whenever you come, we relish your association. And when you don't come, we feel your separation. In Mayapur, yeah, I will give sometimes classes in Mayapur in the temple, and they televise those classes. But class in the morning in Mayapur would be 9:30. No, it would be 10:30 at night here. It would be 8 o'clock there. So that would be 10:30 at night for you, if you want to stay up that late. Mayapur TV. Anyway, we'll see if we can keep this going. We'll keep you posted. Okay? So thank you, everyone. And we hope to see you again after a fantastic week of japa that I know you're all going to have. Okay? You can report in next week with all your ecstatic experiences.